And you're listening to WHUS 91.7 FM. Welcome to Radio Naturopath. This is the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, and this is my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Good morning, Dr. Fran.
Yeah. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. It's up. You can do it. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, we've got ways for you to listen at whus.org and at my website, franstorchnd.com. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at franstorchnd. So I have a really cool show for you today. It's all about farms and farming and stuff, and it's great. And I have two very special guests with me today. I have Diane Dorfer.
Good morning.
And I have Celeste Kurtz.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you. So we have Diane Dorfer, who is one of the owners. She is one of the owners of Cobblestone Farm, along with her husband, Brian Connolly. Yes. And you have a wonderful CSA.
I do.
In Mansfield.
It is in Mansfield.
And it's great. And it's around the corner from me, which is very nice. And so she's going to be talking about the Know Your Farm Fair, which is happening February 24th. And then we have Celeste here, who is a junior in CAHNR, which stands for?
The College of Agriculture, Health, and Natural Resources.
Awesome. And you're pursuing a Bachelor's of Science in Nutritional Sciences with un menor en español.
Sí, claro.
Excelente. That means a minor in Spanish. Guess what I minored in at Rutgers?
Also Spanish?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah, wacky. So we can comunicar en español. Excelente. She's a university scholar and co-op legacy fellowship recipient and also the treasurer of the Spring Valley Student Farm and would like to pursue a career in community nutrition where she grows and cooks food, speaks Spanish, and works with kids, which is so awesome.
Yeah, that's the dream.
Welcome, Diane and Celeste.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. So, gosh, who should we talk to first? How about Celeste?
Okay.
Okay. So you are treasurer. So tell us about the Spring Valley Student Farm and who you are and what you do. How is it founded?
So we were established in 2010 by some very industrious student farmers. So there are 11 of us living there now. It's a small student-run farm about 5 miles off campus. Everything we grow is produced through organic methods. So it's really wonderful. We have all of our student farmers have diverse majors and backgrounds, so it makes for a really cool community of people with different areas of expertise. And, of course, we're always led by our fearless leader and farm manager, Julia, who's just a walking encyclopedia. She has so much knowledge. She's out there. Yeah, it's great. We work under Yukon Dining Services, so everything that we grow goes back to Yukon, gets into the dining halls, restaurants like Chuck and Augie's, One Plate, Two Plate. It's a really cool cycle, you know, to be able to plant some tomato seeds and then months later see students picking them out at the salad bar. I love it.
That's wonderful. So you use a lot of traditional growing methods, do you?
Yeah, we do a lot of traditional agriculture out in the field, so, you know, regular seeds in the dirt. Then we also have an aquaponic system, which is really incredible. So basically there's a big tank of fish, and they do what they do. They eat a lot of food, and then they produce waste. And from that, we have a system that converts their ammonia into usable nitrogen. So we have, it's going to be a lot of lettuce plants actually sitting in the water and taking that nitrogen and growing, which is so cool, so sciencey. We get to do a lot of water testing.
So there's fish in the water, and then there's lettuce growing on top of it.
Well, so there are fish in one tank. That water moves through a media bed that has all of these cool bacterial colonies that convert that ammonia, and then it moves to another tank where all of the lettuce seedlings are.
Oh, that's neat. Mm-hmm. And the seedlings get planted outside?
No.
Or they grow there?
No, they'll always grow in the water.
That's neat.
Yeah, we harvest them right there.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow, cool.
That's super futuristic.
Yeah, definitely.
So that would be something that you could do. Well, tell us, what would an application for that be? Where would something like that, aside from this university, in the real world, where might that be a good thing? Yeah.
It's really popular in drought-ridden areas, actually, because it uses, you wouldn't it's kind of counterintuitive, but it uses a lot less water than traditional agriculture. So California is definitely the hub of aquaponics right now.
Right. That makes sense. So, and I wonder if it would have applications in urban areas, like where there are food deserts.
For sure. Yeah. Vertical farming, areas with food deserts and, you know, just converting old buildings in really urban areas. I think that's the way that agriculture could be moving.
And people in apartments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean,
for sure.
You could be in your apartment in the middle of a big congested city where there's a food desert and you could be growing food.
For sure.
And have fish, which is so cute. What kind of fish are they?
We're going to be having koi fish. So the fish used for this system are usually koi or tilapia, just because they're able to survive in that environment.
And they're
well.
Very simple, inexpensive fish.
Yeah, tilapia for sure. Koi are a little bit more expensive, but we got a nice grant, so we're going to go for the best.
Right. So I just want, but I mean, if they decided to put that into place, into an urban area, you'd be able to get those, either tilapia or koi, you know, and that would just be so interesting if that could, that's something that could be set up. Because one of the things is having a pet is good for you. And it doesn't matter what it is. You could have a spider and it's good for you, it, like health-wise, because it's something or someone you have to take care of. So it could be a turtle. It could be a snake. It could be koi. So
yeah, you can't cuddle with a fish, but you know, they're still nice
matter.
To look at.
They're nice to look at, but it's also, it gives you pleasure when you offer them food and care and they grow and they're happy. And you see this whole set that gives you a pleasure outside of yourself. That's similar, even though you can't literally cuddle with them, you are emotionally and spiritually cuddling with them, believe it or not. This is amazing. I just really like this concept. So I didn't know that there's a Spring Valley student farm. So how are you connecting with the greater community in this area?
Yeah. So we do a lot of education and outreach. I think one of the best things we do is on Fridays we have volunteer hours. So our first Farm Friday is actually going to be the Friday after UConn Spring Break, which is March 23rd. So we do that from 4 to 6. It's a really great opportunity for people to come out and get their hands dirty. We do pretty much anything that needs to be done on the farm. So we'll be seeding, weeding, mulching, working in the aquaponics if that's what you want to do. It's just a really fun time.
That's great. So people can come and see the farm and experience it.
Yeah, they can.
That's really great. So there's a thing called a rural semester.
Yeah, so these are some of the other opportunities that we have going on at the farm right now. Rural Semester is a new opportunity, and it's through Spring Valley Student Farm, also with a sociology of food professor, Dr. Phoebe Godfrey.
Phoebe, who's that?
We know Phoebe.
Never heard of her.
Yeah, she's incredible, involved with CLIC so much at UConn. Everything I go to, it seems like everyone knows Phoebe. and it's also through the Environmental Studies Department.
She's hard to miss.
Yeah. It's an opportunity to spend a semester living kind of off campus at Spring Valley. I think they're calling it like a study abroad, but local study abroad.
Right.
Completion of the program gets you a minor in environmental studies. So you would just be spending a lot of time really getting immersed in the farm community, growing plants, seeing that whole cycle. It's wonderful.
That's such a great thing. So you have the UConn was founded as an agricultural school.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the very real ways that they're getting students involved directly in farming. It's fantastic. So there's opportunities for students who are interested in funding.
Yeah. Other opportunities on the farm. We have some funding for any students interested in completing research on the farm. So that could be in the areas of climate change, sustainable food systems, sustainable ag, pretty much anywhere you can find a connection to the farm. We would be so happy to have you come do research there. We've had some really interesting projects in the past. There was a chemical engineer looking at basically pollution and how it traveled over to the farm, because we use organic methods while we're there, but there are farms around us that are using pesticides. So he was just looking at weather patterns and actually tracking the levels of these chemicals to see how much was actually making it onto our land. So it's really cool. It helps us all grow when students come out and take advantage of these funding and research opportunities. So if people are interested, there's contact information for our farm manager available on our website under Yukon Dining Services. And yeah, that's where all the information is.
And what is your farm manager's name?
Julia Cardabiano.
Very good. That's great. So do you have a background before you came to university? Do you have a background in farming, or what brought you into farming?
I definitely grew up in suburbia. I'm from West Hartford.
Nice. That's great.
Yeah. And then when I started college, I went to Simmons in Boston, and that was much more of an urban environment than I've ever found myself in. It was kind of too much. And after that, I decided that I needed to cleanse and get back to the earth a little bit more. So I took some time off and I started farming more full time. So I started off in Simsbury at George Hall Farm. They're lovely. I've been doing organic for a really long time. And then I moved to Hawaii and did some organic permaculture there. And I also worked at a botanical garden. So I've been farming for about 5 or 6 years now. So I definitely came into Spring Valley knowing about farming and everything that was involved. But like I mentioned before, our student farmers come from really diverse backgrounds. So there are some people who have no experience at all and just know that they really want to try it out. And it's wonderful. You know, everyone brings their own unique experiences and ideas. So it's wonderful.
That's great. And it's a very healing thing, too. I mean, one of the frustrations I have as a naturopathic physician is helping people to eat better and knowing that people are eating a lot of food that isn't real, that people are eating a lot of processed food and people are disconnected from where their food comes from. So there must be opportunities for education, to educate other students and also to educate the greater community through what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I love Farm Fridays so much.
Yeah.
Because you get to meet a lot of people who, you know, the first time they come out, every time they see a bug, they like scream a little bit and run away. But, you know, eventually they just get really into connecting with the earth. I love having students do cover cropping because we get to take our shoes off and stamp these seeds into the earth. You can definitely come in if you have never picked up a shovel in your life. It's a place where you can come to learn.
That's really great. Mm-hmm. So do you have relationships? It appears that you do, but do you have relationships with area farms?
Yeah, we try to get to be in touch with as much people as possible. I just met Diane today. She's awesome. That's kind of how we can talk about the next thing. The Know Your Farmer Fair is going to be a really great opportunity to connect with other local area farmers. There are a lot of wonderful people doing wonderful things in Mansfield.
That's great. So you've met Diane. Have you met any of the other farmers in the area?
I personally have not been to too many other farms. I went to an aquaponics place. I can't remember what the exact name of it was. And then I hear about others through going to the co-op. I always see carrots from Tobacco Road Farm.
Right.
And things like that. So, yeah, I might not be the best to speak on that subject. But
Where would we be without Tobacco Road Farm?
Carrotless.
Brian and Anita. Yeah. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Well, and then Diane's husband, I don't know. He may make the best tomatoes in the universe.
We've got some pretty fantastic tomatoes.
He's a tomato artist. if there can be such a thing, you know.
It's Brian.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
You have rock star tomatoes.
Rock star tomatoes.
You do.
Yep.
They're kind of famous.
They are.
They're very good.
And they're also psychedelic.
They're beautiful to eat and to behold.
Yes, all of those things. They're pretty incredible. So, one of my prides. So, I wonder if the students get involved in any of the area farmers markets, or if the SV.
Yeah, we have a farmers market on campus during the summer.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, it's
so
beautiful. Not many people. So we do that market, and then there's also the Stores Farmers Market.
Yes, which, of course.
You know, yep. We don't actually sell there, but I have frequented many a time. They have great produce.
Yes.
That's
our favorite. That's our go-to.
Yeah, yep. We like seeing you there.
Yes, we are often there.
We love to come. It's great.
Yeah. We do. And we buy the psychedelic tomatoes. They are so awesome. Yeah. So I'm so excited to see you young people getting involved in farming and being really interested in, you know, natural food and, you know, your generation bringing
forward. You didn't
just
say that, you young people, did you?
I'm not one of them.
She said it with a special voice.
I said it with a special voice.
Yeah. She did. Like, we're not that old.
I think I'm old enough to be her grandma.
Well, maybe.
but it's still exciting because, like I said, one of the things, I mean, there's some very basic things I do as a physician, and one of them, I mean, the number one thing, what do you think the number one thing I treat is?
Digestive issues?
No.
No.
No. What causes the digestive issues? This is the number one thing that I treat. Stress.
Oh.
Mm. Yes. And so stress will cause anything. It will aggravate anything. Mm. So whatever your weakness is, that's what's going to come forward. And I treat stress so much. And one of the unfortunate things about stress is, yes, you're right. It will directly cause digestive issues because if you're in fight or flight, you can't be in rest and digest. So one of the stressors in people's lives is that they have too much to do. And they don't slow down and have good food. And so one of the things I try to encourage people to do is get back to eating simply and naturally. And we are so incredibly blessed to have the agriculture we have in this region. Northeastern Connecticut is a prize. I talk with my dear friend and my office manager, Amy, all the time about how blessed we are to have the farms we have in the area, especially yourselves and Brian and Anita, Tobacco Road. We wonder if we have the most nutritious produce in the world here, right here in this area, because of the growing methods that have been brought forth by the local farmers we have here. It's just so incredible. And it also means that the soil here is able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The farming part of it is the farming methods, which means because of the knowledge about the farming methods in this area, that means that that knowledge can be brought other places and people can be eating healthfully and holistically anywhere.
I think that's a really important part of thinking about why a person would support local agriculture. It's not just about feeding yourself and your family. It's about supporting this bigger system that propagates itself in ways that are hard to foresee. And it takes a really long time to build that. So if we, like, as a community or as a culture, decide tomorrow that we really need to eat locally, like, that's it. This is serious now. It doesn't happen overnight. So, like, having Anita and Brian as this, like, backbone in our local food system has really broad effects. And, I get emotional thinking about it.
I hear you. I hear you. I feel you, sister.
Yeah.
I do. Amen. I know. Those two have done so much for this area and for farming. And I mean, we're talking, you should see Amy when she talks about them. She gets really passionate and she's right.
Yeah.
We talk about how Brian and Anita, like, it's the most nutritious food in the world. And you learn from Brian and Anita, right? So you guys did, and Sweet Acres Farms did, and there are other farms in the area who studied with them and used their methods and things they learned from them. So they're like the grandparents of amazing farming in this area. I mean, things that you've learned brought us your psychedelic tomatoes.
Right. Well, but it comes from so many places.
Yes.
So, you know, Dr. Connolly's amazing tomatoes there. Like,
so he also has a background that brought us the psychedelic tomatoes.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Because, I mean, he's a biology professor. He's done a lot of his own plant breeding. And so, I mean, that's also something that's, I think, really unique to hear is that we have UConn. Like, we have this amazing resource, both in terms of infrastructure and expertise in a rural area. I know that initially when people sometimes move here, it's like, what is there to do? This place is in the middle of nowhere, but it's a really lovely middle of nowhere. You know?
I sigh whenever I hear that comment. It's like, this is like, I can't even.
This is paradise to us. I mean, we love living here. We absolutely, I mean, the thing is, you have to get involved in the community. Once you're involved in the community, I feel so connected in this part of Connecticut to all of Northeastern Connecticut. Mm. It's just an incredible place to live. Ron and I, Ron's like, you want to go do this? And I'm like, I want to stay home. Because we could be busy all the time. Yeah. We feel so connected to the community. I mean, what did we do last weekend? We went to Bruce John's birthday party. Mm-hmm. And Bruce John, who has a huge heart and is a great giver to the community.
Local musician in the area.
Yes, a local musician in the area. He set up a big birthday party with a really fun band, back to the 60s, stuck in the 60s. And we raised money for the No Free Shelter. And that event pays the rent for the No Free Shelter for the year. By the way, we have a No Free Shelter. How cool is that? Yeah. Which the community comes and supports. And who did I see at that party? I don't know, everyone. And we were all dressed like hippies, and it was so fantastic. And that's part of what's great about this community. Before that, we had to get there late. Why? Because we had to go to the Thread City Cyclers annual meeting and party and hang out with a whole bunch of people who love to ride bicycles on the fantastic roads in Northeastern Connecticut. And that was a whole bunch of other people that we know. So, I mean, that was a crazy day. And what are we going to do on Saturday? We're going to have another crazy day on Saturday. Why? Because it's the Chocolate Festival in Willimantic. By the way, everybody, it's the Chocolate Festival in Willimantic.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
And the co-op's...
Co-op's
right?
birthday party. Yes.
Yes. The co-op's birthday
so
party.
We're up to probably, I think it's 38.
So.
Yeah.
That's a lot of cakes.
A lot of cakes, right? Uh-huh. So there'll be at least 38 cakes there, right? And if I have time, there might be 39. I don't know. We'll see. I know, because they're probably all signed up at this point. But that's a huge hoot. And there'll be music there and all kinds of stuff going on. And I think if you get there, I'm not sure what the timing on all this stuff is. But, if you start walking around downtown at 10 o'clock, there'll be stuff going on. And you get to the co-op. Co-op party, I think, starts at 10, 11, and it goes till like 5. And there's discounts all day at the co-op. So that's, again, really exciting stuff going on. It's really fantastic.
Also, this Saturday is your favorite Storrs Farmers Market.
That's right. Yeah. It is. The Storrs Farmers Market. It's the indoor market is this time of year. That's right.
At our local Buchanan Center.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so it's twice. So tell us, Diane, when is the Storrs Farmers Market?
It is twice a month from December through May.
No, through April.
No, through April.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah, I don't have this calendar in front of me.
That's okay.
But you can check the library's website. They have an event calendar, and it's posted for the farmers market. And you can also just Google Storrs Farmers Market, and you'll find their website.
Yeah, the Storrs Farmers Market. Yeah, there's a website. It's storrsfarmersmarket.org. It's just all lowercase, storrsfarmersmarket.org. And you can click on winter, and it will give you all of the dates. And so we've already gone through January, obviously. And so the next one is this Saturday, February 10th. And it will be – so it's twice a month, February, March, and April. It's December and January as well. But it's 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., as we said, in the Buchanan Auditorium at the Mansfield Library. And so it's February 10th, and then again February 24th. I'll be in Florida. Oh, well. And then it's March 10th and 24th as well. And then April 7th and 21st. And then starting in the first weekend of May, it will be back weekly from 3 to 6 p.m. And it will be in front of Town Hall in Storrs.
That's right. And the Storrs Farmers Market really is a lovely place to support your local farmers. Like when, I don't know. It is all about the food, and it's all about the farms. In the middle of winter, I think it is probably one of the best places in this corner of the state to get a really the broadest selection possible of locally grown vegetables.
Yeah.
So we're lucky to have that.
We are. It's really great. So Diane, we want to talk about you. Let's start off with, we want to make sure you get to promote the Know Your Farmer Fair.
Yeah.
So please tell us about that.
All right. Third annual Know Your Farmer Fair, Saturday, February 24th. It's from 10 to 1, Wyndham Town Hall Auditorium on Main Street in Willimantic. And it is presented by the Wyndham Community Food Network. If you don't know what that is, you should check out their website, which is, you could.
It's fine, Diane. You're good.
It's WyndhamFood.org. It's a really great resource for the broader community, not just folks who live in Wyndham. And we have a bunch of great sponsors, Camille's in Tolland, Dog Lane, Pleasant Street Pizza, Willimantic Food Co-op, Farmer's Cow, Mountain Dairy, and the Connecticut Department of Ag. So we're thankful to all of those businesses and groups that are helping to make it possible. We want to stress that this event is for the public. Sometimes when maybe the name is misleading and it seems like this is a fair for farmers to get to like network with farmers. But the idea is for the public to know their farmer. So we'd love to see as many people as possible come. There'll be vegetable growers, meat, dairy, honey, maple syrup, soaps, alpaca, sheep. So that's pretty cool. And then CSAs, farm stands, pick your own, and some
hang,
of...
Hang on, there's going to be alpaca and sheep? Like
they,
actual alpaca?
They will not literally be there, I know.
Aww.
If only, right?
Well, they had the regional farmers market, and they did bring the actual alpacas.
Yes.
They're pretty cute, but are they a little cranky?
They can be a little cranky.
And llamas, too.
Yeah, and there's stairs involved. They might not want to go up those stairs.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But you can learn where to go visit some.
Right? That's true.
Yeah, you can.
I got alpaca gloves. They're really soft.
So
they're really
soft.
Lovely.
Nice.
Yes. Yes. And it was very weird because, you know, it was the regional farmers market. They didn't. I don't think they had the regional farmers market this year. I don't know if they did. Mm. Anyway, they have the region. They used to have the regional farmers market. It was on Gilson Square.
Mm.
And maybe it was 2016 and it was July. And they had the alpacas, and they were selling alpaca products, which are generally wool and
right.
warm. And they were selling gloves. So it was very weird to be shopping for gloves in July, but I got them anyway.
It was worth it.
They were soft, and they were pink and lavender, and they were nice. Yes. So please tell us more about the fair.
Yeah. So there will be some little talks, little demonstrations. You could meet the famous Brian Connolly. He'll talk about seed saving and tomatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there will be beekeeping. That will be Shook's Apiary. There will be mushroom growing. That's Bedlam Homesteading. And then how to lacto-ferment vegetables.
Nice.
And that's Jaron. He's Wildcroft. And he also...
Oh, Jaron.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. He's a great person. He's affiliated with Grow Wyndham also.
Yeah.
So that's pretty fun. They're all short presentations, but still a really nice introduction for folks who'd like to learn more.
Oh, it sounds really wonderful. I'll be in Florida. I'll have to get Ron to FaceTime or Facebook Live me while I'm in Florida.
Yeah.
It's actually the day I'm flying down. I didn't know. It sounds like a wonderful time. But I got to visit Mom. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
So Diane, it's so exciting that, you know, you are less than 2 miles from me, and you have this amazing farm, and I love to ride my bike or drive past your house.
I like to wave at you when you go by.
So I holler when I go by.
Yep.
And and 1 year at Passover, it was Passover one or two, a couple of years ago, at the last minute I realized I don't have a chicken.
I know. I remember this.
And I ran in. And I felt really embarrassed because I'd forgotten to like order one from them. And I ran in and you so kindly had a chicken for me.
It was an important chicken.
It was an important chicken too. And it was the Passover, wound up being the Passover chicken. So it fed a whole bunch of people. And I think we had leftovers too.
Yeah.
It was great. It was big chicken.
Yeah. We like the big chickens. Yeah.
So I think you sent me with some eggs too. Mm-hmm. That was good too.
Oh, yeah. Here's our kids want to restart the egg business this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Cobblestone Farm Jr.
Yeah.
It's pretty cute. Right? Yes.
Cobblestone Farm Jr. That's great.
Yeah.
So please, Diane, tell us how you and Brian made the decision to start going into having your own farm.
Mm. It's sort of been a long time coming, I suppose. Let's see. We've known each other for 18 years or so, and we actually both were working at the Yukon EB greenhouses, so like it kind of all started with plants. But the farm itself, farm as a business, this is the season will be going into the fourth year. And when our kids were younger, I had a home daycare. As they got older, it was sort of a natural transition. Like, we had been growing food for ourselves and friends and neighbors for a long time. And it's just the timing was right to be able to do farming full time. So I feel really grateful for that.
Yeah. And I remember when Brian was working at the co-op, mm-hmm. I would have great conversations with him. And one of the things that he would talk to me about is the seed saving.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk a little bit about that? Brian's background in seeds and seed saving.
Oh, yeah. So Brian had been doing seed saving for a long time since he was a teenager.
What is seed saving?
Oh, so at its most basic, so say you grow some corn and you would save that seed so you could plant it again the next year.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, I suppose, all kinds of rules that you need to follow so that you get the results that you want. For example, if I grew a certain kind of corn that I wanted next to a big field of cow corn, my corn isn't going to turn out right. Chances are, because it's getting cross-pollinated.
Yes.
Right. But every group of crops has different rules. So it can be okay to grow two tomatoes near each other, two different varieties of tomatoes near each other, save seed from those, and you'll still get the tomato that you're expecting. Yeah. Whereas if you do that with two different varieties of winter squash, anyone who has a compost pile might know that all kinds of things could come out of that. So, but it's a pretty clear
what we got. We got a volunteer squash from our compost pile, mm-hmm. and it was yummy.
Yeah, that's a lucky one.
Sometimes I don't know what it was, but
weird and bitter, stringy, all kinds of possibilities. Yeah. And so
why is it important to save seeds?
Oh, we could go on and on. most immediately for a lot of people, there's a story connected with those seeds. People will have varieties that their grandparents grew, and that's a really personal connection to your food. Hopefully most people have some kind of story about something that somebody cooked and that's special to them. But to have that something that they cooked with that special bean that they've been growing for generations, that's a pretty lovely thing.
Yes, it is.
So there's that immediate family connection, but also often cultural connections. When Brian was younger and living in Vermont, he made connections with some of the Native American communities up there. And the seed saving traditions within the Native American communities are really strong and powerful. It's, you know, their history is complicated. And so to have that kind of continuity through time and to be able to pull back on or pull, I guess, into that resource is it's a really grounding kind of experience. Yeah. Yeah. And so you could be, you know, Haudenosaunee really far away from like your ancestral place, but still be able to grow some of these crops and be able to feel part of that. And I mean, that's true for anyone. Like, I recently learned that part of my family is Russian. And
really?
Like, right. And so that's interesting. And so to be like, oh, well, these tomatoes or these whatever, you know, to pull into that like agricultural and culinary history can be really rewarding.
Yeah.
But also in the bigger picture, seed saving can be a really important part of helping to build a more robust local agriculture. Tomatoes that work well for us, or different kinds of greens that work well for us, might not work so well, like even on the other side of the state. Or even in Willington.
Isn't that interesting?
Right. So we all farms have these different little microclimates, like different conditions.
Sure they do.
And so to be able to seed save certain crops specific to your needs can help kind of make your farm more robust.
Yeah.
You know, Brian O'Hara does that a lot with greens. We've been doing that with squash and tomatoes more. So it's, and you don't necessarily have to be trying to make new varieties, which is a whole nother thing and also very possible. But even just saving the seed of a certain variety that worked from the individuals that worked best for you can help you be more successful in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
You guys just have such a terrific tradition, and we get to experience the results of that. And I get to meet your mom.
Yeah.
that's so sweet.
Yeah.
Your mother helps you with your business.
Oh,
I'm envious.
Oh, we're super lucky to have grandma, for sure.
And she's very cool. We always enjoy talking to her.
Yeah.
So big shout out. So the other thing. So Diane.
Yes.
You're a farmer.
I'm a farmer.
I don't think you were actually a farmer when I met you, and now you are.
I know.
So please tell me what that transition was like and what it's like to be a farmer.
Oh, yeah. I feel like it's still a transition. There is a lot to learn.
Yeah?
That's a big question.
And you have like a tractor too.
A really
cool tractor.
Oh, thanks.
I see you on the tractor. I can see you from like 300 or 400 yards away from the road on that tractor. I could see the grin on your face when you're driving around the tractor. I think that tractor is kind of a special thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty grateful for the tractor. And I guess that's a lot of what the transition has been like is coming to understand what needs to happen next to make the farm more successful, more viable, more efficient, to help keep the farm from like totally running all of our lives, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm happy to be able to have a job that is always interesting, you know?
Yes. Well, I'm sure there's always something to do.
Yeah.
And you've got one of those jobs that you have to make a decision to, okay, I'm going to stop working now.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. So what do you grow?
We grow a lot. Okay. Yeah. So we do the CSA. And so the goal in that is to provide really wide diversity of vegetables for the folks who come. And so we grow over 30 different kinds of crops, I'm not going to list them all.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Give a few favorites.
Oh, yeah. I know we keep talking about tomatoes.
The tomatoes are rocking. One of my favorite things to do is come to the farmer's market in the summer and get Brian's tomatoes.
Yeah, yeah. They're pretty good. But, I mean, even at this time of year, we're still eating from the farm every day. So
I know. I saw your basement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So going to their house is pretty special. So, you know, again, we don't live too far from there. And they let me come over sometimes, which is very sweet of them. And so I showed up. Please give me a chicken. And they gave me a chicken, and that was wonderful. And then I stopped by. Oh, because I got a turkey. We got a half turkey. Mm-hmm. So right. That was incredible. And we ate your incredible turkey for, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Yeah. We're always eating off it. Soup. Plus, I made lots of bone broth.
Tetragini. Yeah. We have lots of bone broth. We had all kinds of stuff. So I came into the house, and Brian offered me, here, have a squash, or two or three or eight.
Oh, yeah.
And boy, do you have a lot of squash down there.
Yeah, we've got a nice stockpile of butternut.
Oh, my goodness. Boy, do you ever. They must grow very well in that microclimate there by your farm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so, I mean, right now we have winter squash, carrots, turnips, celeriac, beets, onions, garlic, and those are just sort of, you know, stored. But then we have all these things that we froze and canned and so dried things. So it's like people think that eating locally throughout the year is a challenge. You just kind of have to set yourself up for it.
Right. Yeah. And so part of what you do is you can. Mm-hmm. You can.
I can.
Do, 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 uh-huh. do. I had to go
I have
there.
A special skirt that I wear.
No!
Boots.
No. I'll come over and it'll be canning time. We'll wear our skirts and we'll take a photo. And it'll be good, you know, good promotion. So I keep going on about these tomatoes. So I know you can't see me right now, but what I'll have to do is this summer I'm playing more with Facebook Live right now.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind, in the summer I'll come with my phone or a camera and we'll do a Facebook Live and we'll show the tomatoes.
Oh yeah, that's
and,
fun.
Yeah, and so, but I just want to describe why it's so crazy. The deal is you go there and they have tons of tomatoes and they're all different shapes and all different sizes. So you have little cherry ones that are perfectly round spheres. And then you have lots of variations on the oval. And then there's the colors. Okay. So we're not talking red tomatoes. We're talking some of them are red. Some of them are classic red tomato. Some of them are orange. Some of them are goldenrod. Some of them are green and they're ripe. But they're green and they are striated. They have stripes on them. Some of them are purple and they are striated. And some of them are variegated. So they're different. And some of them are tiny and some of them are enormous. And some of them are like off purple. So they're every shade of the rainbow just about. Not every shade. Well, maybe not blue. But but they range really from yellow, pale yellow to deep purple. And everything in between, and you know, hybrids and variations and variegations and stripes, and they're all delicious. And they don't all taste the same. Some of them are, I would say, some of them are sweeter, and some of them are a little more savory, and some of them, you know, have thin flesh, and some of them have thicker flesh, and some would lend themselves to making a nice sauce, and some of them are going to lend themselves, I guess, to making a jam, and some of them you just want to. Like, if you're me, you go there and you just go, nom, 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 nom. I've been known to just, you know. I think sometimes both Diane and Brian, and then Brian and Anita, they're like, here, take a tomato. Because they just want to watch me eat it right then and there. Because I just look like a kid, you know.
Well, I mean, we take a lot of pleasure in people enjoying what we do, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, so we entertain you with how much we love it. But I you know, as a naturopathic physician, one of the things that makes you healthy is eating food that's as natural as possible. So going to the farmer's market and supporting the local farms and then eating of their produce is a very easy way to help to maintain your health. So it gives me great pleasure to go to these farmer's markets and see all of you. And for you, Celeste, that you are, you know, you're coming up and you're in the university, you're at this ag school and you're part of the Spring Valley Farm and it's an organic farm. This is fantastic that you're, you know, that youth are getting into this and it's so necessary. And not only are you guys going to be getting into the actual farm that you're doing, and you may go on to do local farms in rural areas, but also this idea of the aquaculture, and which is going to help save the cities and the food deserts and the deserts.
Yeah, definitely. It's wonderful to be a farmer in training. It's really inspiring to listen to Diane talk about her transition to being a full-time farmer.
Yeah.
I always just feel really privileged to hear from people who have made that transition.
Yeah.
It seems like such a journey. You know, physically it's such work, but also just kind of this really beautiful spiritual transition that I see in people. And everyone who speaks about farming is just so humbled and so connected to their environment and their community. I really am happy to be a farmer in training. And
that's also funny, farmer in training. Yeah. I like that. That's great.
I think anyone can farm on some level, but I think you definitely need to respect the great amount of work that it takes to get food from the earth to your table.
So, Ron, when you were growing up, you lived on a farm.
I did.
Yeah. And so do you relate to any of the experiences that you're hearing here today?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, totally. I grew up on a farm. It was a small farm down in Ledger. It was about 140 acres. We had cows. We had sheep. We had chickens. We had big gardens, you know, a couple of big gardens. It was, you know, that's we did. We ate off the earth. We had, you know, one field that was just potatoes, and we made, you know, enough potatoes to feed everyone all year. So we did that, which was kind of cool. And then, you know, lots of good food in the garden. But we always had a garden at our house too, because and our house, of course, is right next to the farm. So yeah, I grew up.
And it was a big family farm.
It was a big family farm.
So there were, it was you, your house, and then your cousins and aunts and uncles all had houses on this big farm.
All there. We were all in this like collective area, and we were all on the property. And so that was kind of cool. So I, you know, I spent a lot of time down the farm and cleaning out, you know, poop.
Stalls.
All the fun stuff. The chickens were the worst, absolutely the worst. And then we came from the day where, you know, there was no real automation. I mean, we went out and picked eggs, and that meant you took a metal basket out with you, and you reached in, and you grabbed eggs out of a nest, and you put them in, and some of the chickens were not so friendly about that. So you'd get pecked, and, you know, it's just, yeah, you just did that. But and then we had a machine that the eggs would roll through, and we'd look to make sure the eggs were good before we put them into cartons. Yeah, it was farm life.
So who's Uncle Gibb?
Uncle Gibb was the dairy and sheep farmer on the farm. That wasn't the chicken part. My Uncle Art and my grandfather were doing the eggs and the chickens. And Uncle Gibb was doing the cows and the sheep. So, you know, he was a very colorful character, a lot of fun to be around. And I used to go down and help him a lot every day. We'd go down and, you know, do work for him on the farm. And then we would, you know, we did everything. We also cut wood for three houses, you know, to heat their houses. So it was very much a working farm. No
That's
question
what I
about
found
that.
Is that farming is so much more than just what you think of it, with like seeding and weeding and harvesting. You know, I think it's certainly been the most varied work that I've ever done. You know, farming means putting insulation in your greenhouse, making sure that your hose isn't freezing.
And taking care of your equipment, too.
Yeah.
You've got mechanical
yeah.
things to take care of. You've got equipment.
Diane's tractor,
right. And we had, you know, hay rakes and machines that would cut the hay and do all that and bale it and do all that. So we had to do all that type stuff, too. It was fun.
Well, Uncle Gibb was involved in in something regarding the state. Wasn't there, there's a video about the history of farming in Connecticut.
Yes, there is. And then the other thing that Uncle Gib did, and he was well known many, many years ago up here at UConn because he was one of the last sheep shearers in Connecticut. And so he would come up and do clinics for the University of Connecticut, which was kind of a cool thing. And so he would come up here and you know, teach people how to shear sheep. And it's
an amazing skill.
We used to go and help him. We would go with him. Our job was to capture the sheep and drag them over. And they didn't really want to be captured.
No.
So, you know, that's why you bring the kids with you. So the kids would go out and run them down and drag the sheep back. And then my uncle would shear them. And he had a special way of holding them and wrapping his leg around them and holding them in place so that, because if they move, you cut them and you don't want to cut them, mm-hmm. you know, because you're using a shear to shear all the wool off. And it was, it was a good time. Yeah. It was always a good time, you know, going and getting the phone call. And my uncle wanted me to come. I need some help, you know. So we go and we go shear sheep with him, and it was fun.
What was Uncle Gibb's actual name? It wasn't Gibb.
Charles Gilbert Hagen.
Ow.
Right. Yeah. That was it.
So I'm pretty sure that no local farms are going to have kids help shear sheep, but it is something for parents to think about, like local farms as a resource to help connect their kids to food.
Right.
Because, like, I would guess all of the local CSAs are really happy to have kids present. And,
right.
You know, we have, I like kids. So, you know, we try to do as much as we can in the wider community. But families who come to us with kids really, they take joy in getting their kids out there picking cherry tomatoes and beans and seeing the chickens and turkeys and all that. So it's something to think about when you're deciding how you want to feed yourself and how you want to feed your family, that there's a lot more to it than just the food you put on the table. And, you know, I just want to mention something also about access to, like, you know, what we're calling like real food or clean food, and the reality of that often being more expensive.
Yes.
You know, farmers markets and CSAs are perceived as expensive, but if you look in a typical grocery store at the prices of organic vegetables, your farmers markets are like, often you're often going to get a better deal, and you'll get a better deal through CSAs. But I know that a lot of farmers, I don't know, I can appreciate, like, I started growing chickens for meat because we could not afford to buy like the higher quality meat, and I want to make our food as accessible as possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, we still have a mortgage and all of the other real world expenses. I love it when people figure out how they can make it work for them. We've had families volunteer on the farm in exchange for some of their vegetables, and there's ways to figure it out.
That's
right. This is my point. And,
yeah.
I think it's important for folks to talk with their farmers to see if arrangements could be made.
Yeah.
So
that's a great way to do it. And getting your family involved and getting your children exposed to it, I think that's a great thing. I can't tell you how many times I have kids coming in who, I don't like my vegetables.
Mm.
And if you teach a child to like vegetables from early on, if you bring a child to a farm and you get the child planting seeds and tending and growing and participating in the growth of that food, child starts to like vegetables.
Oh, for sure. I love how I can hear, I love eavesdropping on the kids, and they'll be out there. Well, especially when they're with their friends and they're talking about their farm on our, you know, these are our CSA members. It's not my personal kids. But they have ownership, and this is how things happen on my farm. And their parents will tell me that they won't eat the carrots from the grocery store anymore. They want the carrots from their farm.
Wow.
And, there you go.
And not that, you know, you don't want your kids eating other stuff, but the point is that they really get it, and they feel this connection, and they're way more willing to try new things. I have one friend who, her son is like a cereal and toast kind of kid, but he'll try all these different vegetables if he helped pick them up at the farm. So
that's so
yeah,
great.
And it tastes better.
Yeah,
come on, let's face it. You know, the food tastes better when you grow it yourself.
It
really
is.
Does.
So it's been so great to have both of you here today. So once again, Celeste Kurtz, and you are the treasurer of the Spring Valley Student Farm. And tell us once again, you have that first Farm Friday?
Yeah, our first Farm Friday. Ooh, let me find that date really quick.
I've got it down. You've as March 23rd.
Yes, March 23rd, Friday, uh-huh. From 4 to 6. If you're on campus, we actually offer free rides over from NextGen. We have a van that'll take you right to the farm, so it's nice and easy. And for more information about Spring Valley, we're online. So our website is under UConn Dining Services. You click on their little sustainability link, and we're right there. We're on Facebook under Spring Valley Student Farm, and Instagram also if you want to see a lot of our pictures. That's all lowercase, no spaces, Spring Valley Student Farm.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us today,
thank you
Celeste.
So much.
And Diane, the Know Your Farmer Fair is February 24th.
Yes, 10 to 1, Wyndham Town Hall. You can find more information through Facebook. We don't have an actual website for the Know Your Farmer Fair, but I put up a flyer on our farm's website. So we're cobblestonefarmscsa.com. Yeah, be there.
That's great. So it was so great to have both of you today. Diane and Celeste, thank you for being on Radio Naturopath
today.
Thanks
for having us.
It was so much fun, and it was so great to talk about such an important topic. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, which is a call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, and I'd like to thank my host, Ron Meniza, as well. And
you're welcome.
Thank you. And you can, if you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. And you can also check out my Facebook page, Fran Storch, ND, Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath. And I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thanks so much. And we'll be back next week on Valentine's Day with more Radio Naturopath here at WHUS 91.7 FM.